Hey everyone, welcome to Seeking What They Sought, a podcast where four of us friends just incessantly attack each other because we love each other. Now, we're about to start an episode series, it's going to be about four episodes, where we talk about Adventist church structure. This is by no means an in-depth dive into Adventist structure, but we did want to get some perspective on what does a conference do in a union and division and up to the GC. And so this first episode is an interview with my conference president, Doug Bing, of the Washington Conference, and he'll be kind of talking about what a conference does, some of the difficulties of leadership in the context of being a conference president, and we hope that you kind of gain a little bit more insight into what a conference does. So let's get to it. Hey everyone, good to be with you guys today. We are having a conference president with us today named Doug Bing. Doug Bing is actually the guy who hired me on at the Washington Conference when he was the vice president. He is the one who interviewed me. And apparently, I guess I did okay because I'm here today. So, but then also we have Sean and Anthony, who both of their fathers also pastored in the Washington Conference while you, Doug, were in administration.
That's correct.
So I'd asked this before, but I, you know, no dirt to share on them, I guess.
Not
just two good young men never ever made a mistake in their entire life. Is that what I'm hearing?
I didn't say that. I just said they're very good young men.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I am disappointed. I always look for dirt on, especially Sean. But so one of the reasons we're doing this series is because a lot of us don't have a good idea of what our governance structure is in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. The overall structure is, you know, you can kind of understand there's local church, conference, unions, divisions, and then the general conference. But you know, what happens at a lot of those levels is not necessarily common knowledge in essence. And so we're doing this series to educate ourselves on ourselves as pastors and teachers here, but also anyone who's listening on what happens at those levels, what happens in the dark offices where all of the sketchy, you know, the things, all the rumors that we create happen, which I'm sure you've had your fair share of those things, those accusations leveled at you. Yeah, so that's why we're having this conversation. And so we wanted to bring Doug in, who is, again, he's my conference president now. And so the first thing I wanted to ask Doug is tell us a little bit about your journey from kind of maybe the beginning of pastoring into conference leadership.
Sure. I when I graduated from college, I went straight to seminary. The conference who hired me sponsored me directly to the seminary. So I did not get some of the previous times that people do before they go to seminary. So I went straight to seminary. Upon graduation, I went to the Midwest, where I was sponsored by the Kansas-Nebraska Conference. Served in Omaha, Nebraska as a youth and young adult pastor and associate pastor in one of the larger churches there. And really, really enjoyed that. Interestingly enough, I was told by the conference president at that time that I was going to be assigned to Western Nebraska in a two or a three church district. I can't remember which it was. And that's where I was going to be assigned once I finished my time in Omaha, Nebraska. And typically at that time, you spent a year as an intern and then you went straight into a district of some kind. But in the process of all of that, the conference president changed. And so I never made it to Western Nebraska. Instead, right after that, I became an academy pastor. Started teaching Bible, running the academy programs, the youth chaplaincy, the chaplaincy of the school, and went from there to another church. I had pastored some churches, I guess, while I was in college. And yeah, that would have been really amazing.
Impressive. If
I'd
been
in high school age pastor. That would be something.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? But anyway, and then after that, I pastored for quite a few years in Wichita, Kansas, and that's where I had my experience of planting a church and working with associate pastors. And I've I've joked a lot about it that they succeeded, and especially the ones I had at first, you know, they succeeded in spite of me. because there's not a lot of training for senior pastors to all of a sudden be thrown in with an associate pastor. So anyway, from there, I just in the networking I did and the church planting networks that I did, I know that one of my friends had ended up recommending me a number of times to serve in a conference office as a ministerial director. I turned those positions down, and one place was looking at me as an executive secretary or a vice president, and turned that one down as well. Was told, interestingly enough, you guys might like this, I was told by one person that I should never turn this down because I would never have another chance to serve in a conference office again. Oh. And I know my wife and I said, well, I'm not sure that I ever want to serve in a conference office, and as if that's some, you know, like that to be attained. And it's not that you should avoid it, but it wasn't necessarily something at that point that, you know, if God wants me to do there, he'll put me there kind of thing. And anyway, and then I ended up coming out here as ministerial director and moved from there into vice president, and then from there to this position. So that's the short version, or maybe the long version.
Well, I was going to ask, I you said this before, but you taught for a little while, and I believe your wife was a teacher as well, wasn't she?
Correct.
So what advice do you have for Sean? Is a teacher, but I don't have
All right,
much
Jesse,
faith that the kids are learning anything there. So could you give Sean some advice on how to be a teacher?
Well, you know, Sean teaches is Sean actually has the training to be a teacher. I was thrown in the middle of the year when I became a teacher. I was thrown in to teach Academy Bible, sophomore Bible. I only taught one class a day, one section of that class. So I'm not sure I would ever call myself an expert. I do know that, I asked lots of questions. I learned to listen a lot. I tried to boil it down to simplicity. In regards to the gospel, because I think sometimes kids come away from academy or even any kind of place where it's made way too complicated. And I tried to make it as simple as possible and gospel focused. So that's what I tried to do. So
it's awesome. So Sean, take all that to heart.
Hey, Jesse, for our audience, full disclosure, Jesse was failing to record our first time through with Doug. And Doug is already thinking of ways that he can relocate Jesse after this recording.
Got him.
So just throwing that out there, Jesse. I love you.
We might add a few more churches to his two church districts.
No. Yeah, we were talking about
Put him in a school. Put him in a school.
There we go.
Bible
there
teacher.
Teaching full time like Sean does. That's correct.
That's right. Yeah.
That would not be the intersection of all of my talents and all of my gifts.
Oh, how the tables have turned.
Yeah.
So, Doug, I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but you never aspired necessarily to be a. I know there are some people who kind of have a level of. What's the word for it? They want to move
ambition.
Upwards in a ambition. That's the word. They have a level of ambition, and so they become a pastor. I've heard of at least a couple people that I know of that are like, yeah, like I would love to be in administration someday. Were you like that at all?
Well, you know, at certain stages, like I mentioned, I really wasn't at that time, and when I was asked the first several times about it, I really wasn't at that stage. Part of my background is I do have a degree in business, and there was a time when I truly aspired not to be a pastor, but I wanted to be a hospital administrator. And so I do have that aspiration from my past. And that was the path I was really headed down when I was in college, was to be a hospital administrator. I ended up getting a double degree, and I have a degree in theology, and I had to do the Greek thing and all that kind of stuff as well. And so I've always had an interest in that area. But frankly, you know, in the era that I was raised, when you first started becoming a pastor, you were told you don't ever tell people your aspirations. And so I've kind of tried to be the opposite. I've asked pastors openly, you know, hey, what do you want to do? Well, you know, let's help you to figure out how to get there, you know. And I'm, if you want my job, tell me now, and I will give you all the training I can get so that you can have the job, you know, and that I'm okay with that. Because I think we all have to hold jobs loosely. As it's not like we or anything like that. So there was a time when I think I was interested in administration. Was I actually actively pursuing it? I don't think I ever really did that. But just because of my background, I did have an interest in those kinds of things. So
the lesson, kids, is don't try, and someday you too will be a conference president.
If I could say some more, I do believe it's good for those. It's okay for somebody to say that, because even if you never make it, you know, somebody might invest in you to give you leadership skills that might help you in whatever other job you're doing. And I do believe, you know, I was really grateful for the people who helped me along the path, because I think we all stand on somebody else's shoulders.
Yeah, that's good. So what were some of the biggest surprises or just things you didn't know? You were a pastor, you know, you were coming in now to be a ministerial director in a conference. What were some of the things that surprised you in joining a conference leadership?
Well, you know, I guess I had lived a charmed life beforehand, you know, and, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you hear about all these rumors and stuff like that. I guess I just was pastoring really hard in my church and I didn't ever hear anything. And I remember the first two or three meetings I went to in troubled churches as a ministerial director, I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I mean, I was like, I think I was just as naive as they come in some respects, just to be honest with you, gentlemen. And so there was some tough things that, you know, I'd seen tough stuff in church members. You know, you have church members that get into a fight, or you have those kinds of things. But, you know, some things that I saw that were either done by pastors or done to pastors that were troubling, you know, and it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch. Yeah, I think within the first year, you know, I saw, you know, I mean, it's not a huge secret in the Washington Conference. I saw a number of pastors lose their positions because of issues that they had been involved in. And it was really hard. Wow. It was hard to watch.
Now, so you came into conference leadership as a ministerial director, became vice president, spent quite a long time doing that. You said, I think 14, 15 years,
right?
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Yeah, 15.
So as vice president, what's the difference between vice president, president for in your experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I'll even go one step further in what's the difference between a ministerial director and a vice president. And I kind of joke that when you're ministerial director, you get to be the good cop. And when you're the vice president, you get to be the bad cop. You know, and that's probably a very overgeneralization, just to be honest with you. But in some respects, especially the way it's organized in this conference, and ministerial directors from conference to conference are done a little bit different. But in this conference, the ministerial director it gets to be the good cop, and the executive secretary or vice president, whatever they call it here, they call it vice president here, but you kind of have to come in and be a little bit more of the heavy, so to speak, you know?
So the ministerial director is kind of like the pastor of the pastors, in a sense, making sure they're doing okay, caring for them.
Right.
And then the vice president, you're kind of more on the hiring job. I don't know if I would say job performance, but more so like nuts and bolts side of things, maybe. Yeah. Would that be true?
Yeah, the vice president of administration, basically, you know, if you read the job description, and you know, it deals with the hiring. It does deal with job performance. It deals with, you know, from the pastoral side, you deal with all of the minute taking, all the legal aspects of running a conference, you know, those kinds of things. The difference between that and the president is the president is really more in charge of he's in charge of the whole thing, of course, but you know, he's really focused on vision. He's really focused on you know, driving the vision of the conference and those kind of things. And that's in broad strokes. But mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of committees that both of those positions sit on, whereas you don't have to do it so much in the ministerial director part. But there's a lot of committees that are oversight committees that we sit on, and but one of them is more of the chair of the committee that drives the vision part of it. And the other one is more of the, okay, the committee is met. Now let's go make sure it happens kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm just an average person, local church. What in the world does a conference do? Like what is a conference there for? You know, why does it exist in practice?
Sure. Well, you know, the Adventist Church is organized in a conference setting, whereas, you know, many churches are what's called congregational. And, you know, there's actually advantages to both organizational styles. I am obviously in favor of the congregational style in that, you know, most congregational pastors, when you sit down and talk to them, and I've talked to them a number of times, they will tell you, man, we love the cohesiveness that comes from being part of an organization, and we don't have to sit there and figure things out. So just from a missional point of view, I believe that a conference, if I were to say, what does a conference do? I think the first thing is we make sure that we try to, I'll say it that way. Let's be honest. You know, it's sometimes it's like herding cats a little bit, but you know, I think that the real focus is we're going to focus on the mission of the church, which is to share the gospel to all the world. And our world, you know, in the Bible, it talks about, you know, you start in your Jerusalem and then you go to your Samaria and stuff like that. Well, you know, so many times we've been willing to go to Samaria or to the uttermost parts of the earth, and we forget to start in our own Jerusalem. And so I think that that's the role of the conference, is to say, what is, you know, where's the next church plant going to be? I mean, you know, I pray right now for 3 new church plants in 2021. And last year we prayed for 3, and I prayed for 4, we got 3, you know. And so we set goals like that, and we really look for the strategies of how we're going to grow the church. We also look, frankly, at the other end of the spectrum as to a church that's not doing well. And how can we, you know, prop it up if it needs to be propped up, or do what we need to do, you know, whatever that may take. And sometimes you end up closing churches because of you want to be faithful to God's resources in regards to those kind of things. So I think that's the first thing. And of course, there's always the legal entities of it. You know, and we could drone on and on about that, but you know, we do hold title to everything, which sometimes is aggravating to some people, to be honest. But when it comes down,
when you say you hold legal title, you mean like to church property or school properties or things like that?
Yeah.
Why is that aggravating to people?
Well, because sometimes they want to do things to their property that we end up saying no. You know,
and oh, gotcha.
And because sometimes if they look at it from a legal perspective, what they're wanting to do is actually illegal. You know, like sometimes we catch a church, it's like, look, you built this without a building permit. You know, we don't, you know, that's not, you can't do that, you know, and we do it for their own good, but sometimes it's not, you know, always welcomed and stuff. But, you know, so we have that. I think the other issue, and when you think about the fact that Washington Conference, for example, has over 500 employees, most people don't think about the fact that we have over 500 employees. We have to have a very robust legal and HR department that to make sure that people are paid in an equitable way. Sometimes that can be, you know, sometimes we have churches, for example, that they want to hire an administrative assistant, for example, and they don't want to pay them on scale. You know, well, she doesn't need to be paid as much because she's retired and stuff like that. No, we want to do things that are equitable across the board and those kinds of things. And so, you know, it's not like we'll tell them you can't pay them. I mean, you can't hire them, but, you know, you're going to pay them according to a scale that makes sense to, if you're an administrative assistant in Edmonds, you're going to get the same pay as an administrative assistant with the same experience in, you know, in North Creek, you know, or whatever. So
That makes a lot of sense, especially because I have watched churches and have been, I think I have been the recipient of some churches who were just like, yeah, you know, we'll just give them a gift at the, you know, we'll just give them a gift at some point, or we'll call it that, or, you know, what, like, it's just super sketchy practices,
right,
that then end up, you know, it's not a very, what's the word? Not only is it not responsible, it's not very Christ-like to do things kind of,
I mean,
like,
yeah, you look at what the Bible says, you know, and I just read it just recently, you know, the laborer is worthy of its hire. And,
yeah,
you know, I think that that's totally appropriate. And that means from the janitor and to the, you know, to the pastor, the teacher, whoever, you know, and you pay them according to what they're supposed to do. And, you know, some churches don't, Some local entities don't always like that because they try to skip by. But I think the conference is an organization that can say we're going to have some uniformity here in a way, and every church is allowed to share the gospel in a way that works for their context, and we want that. But I think the real focus is gospel and, you know, sharing the gospel, and that's what we're about. But, you know, that's the big thing is the vision. and make sure the vision is unified, but then also making sure that the legal aspects are all taken care of. And that's actually a lot bigger job than most people who wonder what's happening in our dark rooms, as you mentioned earlier. They wonder what's happening, but that really, there's a lot of that that goes on.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, like you mentioned, like we've joked around with that a bit, but you know, there are areas of dissonance between the local church and conference, and that's not just in one conference. That can be all over the place. You know, I can see that in my own conference, and I've seen it other places too. So, I've asked this of other people, other conference and union leaders and pastors, of where did that start? Where did that level of separation, is that just natural of any government structure, of any, for a church or for politics? Is it just natural for that to occur over time as you get bigger? Or is there a reason, maybe even just in our own Adventist context, why there is that, there's sometimes animosity, right, on subjects of where tithe is going, where budget is being used, on other issues of, like you mentioned specifically, how church property is used. But you could go on and on about lists of areas of dissonance between local church and the conference level. Where did that heart begin? Where did that dissonance begin?
Yeah, that's a good question, Sean. You know, I think that sadly, part of it is a little bit in the way that the church has been run sometimes. You know, one of our core values in the Washington Conference is integrity and transparency. And, you know, I tell people, you know, you want to go over the Washington Conference budget, I'll sit down and go over it with you line by line, all 58 pages of it or whatever. It's a long, long document. And to be honest with you, I know that that has not always been the case in some conferences, maybe even in this one, I don't know. But in the history that I've been in this conference, working with my predecessor, and stuff, we've always tried to follow a real transparency. And I've had comments from pastors, I've had comments from church members, you know, that it's like, wow, I don't know, I could just ask that and find that out. But that has not always been true. And I've experienced that. And I've even had to apologize, because sometimes there's times when we weren't trying to be secretive. It's just that we weren't always as open in communication. I think open communication really, really solves a lot of those issues, because our church should not be, you know, at a local church level, if a local church member wants to see the local church budget, you have to, you know, technically you're supposed to get that voted through a church business meeting and you know, that kind of thing. And you should be able to see the local church budget and know where, you know, 25 cents is budgeted for if you're going to go that small or whatever. And so we've tried to be very transparent. The only thing we don't share openly is the pay, you know, what each individual person is paid, you know, and we'll show you the pay scale, you know, but we're not going to show you names because there's legal issues, but we're trying to be transparent about every other issue, but it has not been that way. And I'll tell you an example, because all of you are employees of the Washington Conference, not of the Washington Conference, but employees of the church. You know, something that did not happen when I was starting is that sometimes conferences didn't always share even what all the benefits were for their own employees.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
If they don't know about it, then they can't collect on it, you know, and that was the attitude that was sometimes done. And so when you have that kind of thing, where it's even your own employees are suspicious of you, you know, then that just kind of spreads, you know. And I'm really proud of our treasury team here, for example. I mean, it's like, you know, we call people up and say, did you know you had this? Because you haven't taken advantage of this. Mm. We want you to know that you have this. And I've heard them on the phone actually doing that to people and saying, did you know you could do this? Because we want you to have that. So I think it comes.
Yeah, that's a good one. You're saying it comes from transparency.
I think it
comes. Or it comes with a lack of transparency
in the past. And sadly, it still happens in some places, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, this is kind of a question that starts to get into maybe some of the angst surrounding church governance structure. But you know, what are some of the things that are good about our overall organizational structure, and that's maybe better than other church structures? You kind of mentioned Congregationalist being a potential problem, especially for people who are being hired on, but yeah, what are some of the aspects of our organizational structure that not as a superiority thing, but just may function better than
Sure.
Than others.
I think that, well, one of the things I've already mentioned, I think just from a legal perspective, I'll get to say the words right, legal perspective, I think are really valuable. I think that those are issues that have been shown over and over again. And we're not the first to follow a conference structure. I mean, there's other church, other denominations, very good denominations that have also followed it as well. So I do think that that is something that is very, very helpful. You know, when we have conference system, for example, you might have, I mean, in this conference, for example, we have pastors who, if they they have to pastor churches that wouldn't be able to support them financially if they were in a congregational system. Whereas you also have churches that have a very good tithe return, for example, that help support the smaller churches and grow them. We have churches, you know, for example, if you're a church planter in a non-conference system, you know, there's some really good programs out there, but you have to kind of go out and raise your own money and do all this kind of stuff and tie onto an organization. Whereas we have churches that turn in good tithe. And right now we're planting a church with, you know, one of our pastors in Tacoma. We were planting on another a church in Kirkland, and we're getting ready to plant another one probably starting this fall with funds that come in from those kind of things. And the pastor doesn't have to be worried about raising the funds and, you know, trying to go out and hustle his own money because he's got the backing of an entire conference, which helps spread the mission of the church. So not only all the legal things that, you know, that we have a lot of attorneys that help us take care of those things, something that local employees don't always appreciate because most of them don't ever need it, to be honest with you. But, you know, when church members kind of go after the local teacher or they go after the local pastor, you know, for some many times for unnecessary reasons and in ways that are less than charitable, the conference serves as a backstop for them. And if you're in a congregational system, you can go to church one night and go to church board the next week and you're out of a job. And those kind of things just don't happen in a conference type of structure.
Makes a lot of sense. Actually, I think that's why Anthony still has his job after that whole embezzlement situation that he was in, you know, the lawsuit that got filed against him. And
they're standing up for you down there, Anthony. They're standing up for you.
They really are. I'm glad they're on my side.
just to clarify, none of that ever happened.
Jesse has this this running joke that I haven't been involved in embezzlement and fraud.
Anthony's mom just heart stopped as she was listening to this.
Indeed. She's very
concerned. I'll tell you a little secret. One time I was talking to a pastor. Maybe I shouldn't tell you this. It's a little rabbit trail, but I'll tell you about organization here.
I'm ready.
A guy who was referencing one of our pastors, and it was one of our pastors. You know, most of the time I don't want to get rid of any pastors. I mean, just to be honest with you, there's occasionally time that people say, "Hey, I want to leave," and that's fine. But anyway, so this guy was a brand new ministerial director. He's calling me up, and I was the VP. I was the VP at the time, and he called me up and he said, going through this whole, you know, standard referencing form and all this kind of stuff, and I said, when he got done, he goes, "Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell me?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, he's a really pretty good guy, with the exception of his drinking problem that he's been struggling with." And then I said, "And, you know, him and his wife have been really having some fights as well." And there was this really, really long pause on the other end of the phone. And the guy goes, "I don't know you very well." And he says, "And I know I'm brand new at this job," but he says, "I think you're joking, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, because I don't want to get rid of this guy. This guy is always doing all this stuff, and I don't want to get rid of him." And anyway, but he actually believed me there for about 30 seconds.
And so this guy's reputation is tarnished.
Yeah. So be careful what you say about Anthony, because I, you know, we don't want him to lose his job, you know.
Yeah, Jesse, be careful.
True, yeah.
I'm going to get a phone call.
I'm so sorry, Anthony.
I'm going to get a phone call from Sandy. She's going to be like, "What are you guys talking about?"
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so in that, you know, we've talked about some of the good things about our organizational structure. What are some of the things that could be better? I mean, that list is long, but.
Well, the list is long, and you know, I know you've interviewed my good friend Elder John Friedman, and he and I joke about this a little bit at times, in that when you're in the union, you say the conferences could go away, and when you're in the conferences, you could say the union's going away. So, you know, we have this little kind of joke that we, and so now that he's gone to the union office, I give him a hard time about those kind of things. But the thing of it is, I do believe that, especially in this union, and I'm going to only speak for this union, most conferences in this union, I would say, run a fairly lean operation. And you know, you compare them to others, and I'm not trying to tear any other conferences down, but I'm saying we run in a fairly lean operation. And even our own union is a fairly lean operation compared to other union offices that I'm familiar with. I say that to basically say, I think that there's been times, and there are times, when there's a duplication of services between organizations. Just like the conference really protects employees on the local level, the union serves as a buffer for us in areas. And so there's a real value to that. There is challenging times in that we don't need some duplication of services though. And, I think that that's an area that could be improved. There's been many discussions about that. If I'm just going to be really honest with you I think that you look at some of the conference lines that are drawn in our division, and many of them were drawn at times when technology was different. And I think that if we were to really have an honest conversation, we could redraw some lines and broaden the umbrella of protection and so to speak, and would probably save some funds in that regard as well. Those kind of things take a local constituency to do it though. And many local constituencies aren't willing to do it. It's not like guys in our positions aren't ready to see those kinds of things happen, but many local constituencies aren't willing to make those changes because they like the independence of having their own local conference. So what I think the next thing that could be improved, and it's happening, I see that leadership happening in our own union. And it's not something that everybody talks about a lot, but it's not like it's a big secret, is that there has been collaboration across conference lines on different projects. For example, our conference was asked by the union to go serve as auditors for a week in one of our smaller conferences. And we went because they can't afford an auditor. They shouldn't have to buy an auditor to hire an auditor. And we went, and in 1 week, I forget, we sent 5 people over from our conference in a week and did, I forget how many years worth of audits for them and saved them.
Wow, that's awesome.
Saved them a lot of money and saved them not only a lot of money for that, but even into the future, because we'll probably do that again. And we've been having conversations within conferences to say, how can we collaborate more to say, hey, how can we do this across conference lines and quit worrying about, oh, I can't go here because it's across the conference line. And so I see a lot of that, more of that happening, and I see more of that that's going to be in the future. And I think that that needs to happen.
See, what I hear behind everything that you're saying is, you're talking about how a long time ago these borders were drawn that might not make as much sense today. What I hear you saying is that you're forming a pretext to go to war with the opposing conferences, so that you can take as many churches and as much territory as you can to enlarge your conference. That's what I hear you saying.
Well, the prayer of Jabez was very clear. He said, Lord, enlarge my territory. And so, the prayer of Jabez is biblical. And I think we can follow that prayer very, very faithfully. So yes, no,
catch it.
So
how much of Canada are we taking?
Well, it's actually, we're wanting to expand south and take part of the Oregon Conference. Tell my friends now.
Okay.
I'm just, Dan Landrieu is a good friend of mine. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear this. This sounds like we get some exciting battles happening.
Absolutely.
In the future.
It's all brewing. It's all brewing. So, seriously, we've had good conversations with, a lot of the larger conferences, especially in this union. And if I'm sure you know about this union, for example, we have 3 conferences that are considered large and we have 3 conferences that are considered small. And we've looked for ways that, instead of saying, hey, we're going to redraw the lines because that's a real challenging constituency issue, is how can we collaborate? And I don't even know where that's going to go yet, but I really hope we can. And one area that we're doing right now that the union is coordinating that is saying, hey, we're going to send some evangelists. We're going to, maybe a pastor will send over and say, hey, why don't you go to an evangelistic meeting in Alaska or Idaho, or, you know, somewhere, and help another small conference that they won't have to pay for it. And we'll give experience to some of our own people as well. So there's lots of areas that we can do. And there's, I think there's areas that we haven't even explored yet.
That's one of those things that I think a lot of us don't really pay attention to because it doesn't affect our local church. And so, you know, you don't hear about a lot of those things happening. And I'm not saying that's even an issue. It's just you don't hear it. And so it's very easy to assume, like, well, what are they doing over there?
Yeah,
and so correct. That's pretty cool to hear. Now, with that, you kind of brought this up. This is a very interesting question. And what I would really like is names of entities and specific people. And so, no, I'm just kidding. But we do have an imbalance of people in office buildings versus people in pastoral roles. That's, I think it was at a division or GC level, there was a, I believe it was a GC level, there was a study done, and the amount of administrators, or at least in that category, versus pastoral. In some areas, it was like 1-to-1, you know, it very high. And so what do you think has caused that? And even if you're willing to talk about it, what are some of the hard things that might have to be done to change that?
Sure. You know, I don't remember. I remember seeing that report, and I wish I had that report in front of me. But if I remember right, that was a several, you know, that was a GC-wide thing, study. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as in a lot of the unions. You know, I'm not talking about union offices, I'm talking about union territories. I don't see as huge of an imbalance, frankly, in this division as I have seen in other divisions. And so I would say that first. But I think the second thing is, I think that in the North American division, I think you see, well, I'm just going to stick with the NPUC. That's what I'm familiar with. All right. I don't want to speak for the North American division. You can talk to the conference, the division president, and ask him those questions. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that once again, when there's a duplication of roles, you know, that needs to be addressed. And I think it should be addressed. I think it should be done in a stewardship way. I don't believe the church is short of funds as far as the ability to gain funds. And some people say, well, we need to do that so we get more money into the church. I don't believe it's about funding. I believe it's about stewardship of the funds. Even if you had all the money in the world, you shouldn't spend it in a poor way. I think that I've seen churches that you think don't have any money, but they come up with a grand vision and all of a sudden the money is there. So even if all the money were there in the world and we had 100% of people paying tithe, we still should be good stewards of funds and how it's used. So I think the division, I think that the duplication of services is something that can be addressed. Helping across conference lines, I think, can really help people do that. And I think it's more than just about pastoral roles as well. If you just look at pastors versus the overall 500 employees that the Washington Conference has, it kind of lowers the ratio of conference people versus the number of employees you might have.
Well, because this is an important recognition that I don't know if everyone knows, but because we do have pastors and then all teachers, at least most teachers are hired. Let me say that differently. The vast majority of teachers, with very few exceptions, are hired through the conference. Am I correct on that?
Correct. Yeah. And everybody that works in the church, whether they're funded by a local church or whether they're not, or whether they're funded by the conference budget, they're all considered by the United States government. They're all considered an employee. That's why we provide support services for churches that, you know, a church comes along and says, hey, we've got to let go of our administrative assistant. How do we do that? We ran out of money. And so we have to show them how to do that in a legal way. But as far as office buildings versus pastors and teachers, yeah, I think the ratio is too high. But if you look at it from a ratio of overall employees, it's not as high as you might think. That doesn't excuse the fact that we still should address duplication of services if there is. And I think we should be willing to have that discussion.
I'm looking at the presentation right now, and I think in the NAD it was 0.9 administrators for every one pastor is what the study says, and so obviously the division's bigger than North American. Can also consist of Latin America and Central American and those areas too, which I know is different, but Here's a big question that is, I think, quite interesting to a lot of people. The Washington Conference is an out of compliance entity. It's one of those conferences. It's one of those bad conferences that the conference was that the general conference, the big general conference, was trying to. I don't know the right word for. I don't know if I have a good word for what they were trying to do. Discipline, though, I think is in essence the big picture word. You know, it's one of those things that's really hard to come to terms with overall. The issue, just in general, you know, whether you support it, you don't support it. But how do you see remaining faithful to the overall vision of the Adventist Church and the overall, you know, structure and being part of the Adventist organization while being in a position of non-compliance?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to describe, I don't know if you would like to describe what exactly makes our conference out of compliance.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, for those of you who are listening, we are not allowed to, we're not doing ordination of women in this conference. So if that's, you know, if that's where some of your listeners jump to, we're not doing that in this conference or in this union. The areas that we have voted to follow really has to do with some areas that deal with women in ministry, though. And one of the areas is, for example, is that, you know, it says in a lot of in a lot of places that a woman in ministry is not allowed to serve as a conference president. And we have voted that any person can serve as a conference president in this conference. We've also voted to allow women to officially plant churches, which is another area that an unordained person is not allowed to do. So those are some things we have voted. Those seem to me very missional oriented. And so we are staying in missional, and it's something that we've done in our context, but we do not believe takes away from the gospel to the entire world. If you're going to be really honest about the out of compliance, those three words that have ominous overtones, if you're really going to think about it, I mean, I've sat on committees where back at the North American Division and at the year-end meetings for the GC, and heard the reports for how many entities worldwide are out of compliance, just not in those areas. And the percentage of people that are out of compliance in financial areas is astounding, you know? And, you know, when you talk to some of those people back there, ask them that question. Ask them, you know, what percentage of entities are out of compliance, you know, from a financial perspective and following the financial policies of the Adventist Church, which I think are put there for our protection. And we're not out of compliance in that area. We are, you know, we have some of the cleanest audits of any kind in my career right now. I mean, my hat's off to our Treasury Department. We have clean audits. We're not doing anything shady. We're sending all of our money forward, even to people that call us out of compliance. We're doing all of those things, and stuff like that. So I do believe that we can remain very faithful. And I'm not even blaming people who might be out of compliance in other areas, because, you know, especially finances, because sometimes cultural differences take issue even in how they handle their finances. And while I don't know the details, I just know the statistics of what they shared. You know, I think that we have to allow a little bit of that cultural issue take place. As long as we're still focusing on the gospel to the whole world, we have a special message for this world, and I believe that people can do that and have slight differences of opinion and who can do that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, that you can still be faithful to it, the overarching organization as a whole, while also acknowledging cultural differences and different things that are on the heart of different areas in the world, if I'm hearing you correctly.
I would believe that's fair, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Do you
guys have any, Sean or Anthony?
Yeah, if I could. I don't want to call it playing devil's advocate, but because I don't want that to seem like, you know, it's attacking or, but rather seeking to understand, I think, more your position, Doug, and the position of the conference is kind of looking at those, just the issue of women's ordination in general. Just curious how you would talk about you know, if they're sort of a, and you haven't, you haven't stated this exactly, but if there is sort of a feeling, which it sounds like from some of the moves that the conference has made towards allowing women to plant churches and, the possibility of a female president, if there is sort of a conviction that that's the direction we need to move on, what are some of the things that sort of roadblocks that you see sort of stopping us from getting to the point where we get to a woman's ordination position, if that is indeed where the conference, you know, could see itself going?
I'm not sure I totally understand your question, so I'll take a stab at it. And if I don't get there, let me know.
I said a lot of words.
I'm very much a guy who believes in organization, and I believe in our organization. I believe in our church, and I don't want anybody to think that I don't believe in what the Seventh-day Adventist Church teaches, what they have as a mission to our church for the last days, and I believe those things, and probably far more conservative than most people would. By me saying that I believe in women in ministry, some people would probably say I'm not conservative. I'm actually far more conservative than most. And I don't say that to brag. I'm just saying that's just kind of the core of who I am. You know, I'm a Midwesterner, yeah. And I'm a pretty conservative Midwestern guy. But I don't believe that God puts muzzles on people. And I believe that people can serve in ministry, whether they're male or female. I believe that people can serve in ministry, whether they get paid to do it or not. And I believe that people can, I love the illustration, for example, if you go to Disneyland, and I'm sure you've all been there at least once, you know the story, everybody's considered a cast member, the janitor is considered a cast member. And the thing of it is you go on, you can Google and you can go on and look up Disneyland janitor. And you look at the pictures of some of the things the janitor does, some of them are trained to draw pictures in water on the sidewalk, on a hot day. They draw pictures of Mickey Mouse, and some of them are trained to play tunes with their feather dusters on the handrails. I mean, they do some amazing things. Why does a janitor do that? Because he or she is a cast member, and they're there to make people's visit to Disneyland as special as they possibly can. And I believe that the church is a priesthood of all believers, and that everybody can draw a picture of Christ, and everybody can have a role to play to make somebody's life just a little bit better. Galatians, the last chapter of Galatians says, don't ever weary of doing good. You will reap a harvest. Don't ever weary of doing good, and even start in a family of faith, a family of believers, in Galatians 6. And I don't believe that that is limited to a gender. I believe that's done for everybody. And anyway, I'm starting to preach a sermon here, so I'm going to stop.
It's far.
In my mind.
So then what are some of the roadblocks that then would say, well, we believe in this, we're doing it, we're going to start, actually putting a stamp on ordaining women? What, like, from an organizational standpoint, because it's very easy for all of us outside of this to be like, why not just do it? Especially if you support it. Mm-hmm. Or on the other side of things, like, there's no way that you should ever do something like that. That puts you or anyone in leadership in a very awkward space of like, well, then what do I do? Yeah. What are some of the things that?
I do believe those are roadblocks. And one of the things that I just have a lot of respect for, our particular union has chosen not to have that discussion. And I respect that. And I'm going to follow that lead. We don't even without that, we don't have the right to say we're going to lay hands on Jesse Churchill, because Jesse Churchill is going to go through a process. And then we ask the union if we can we have to write a letter to the union saying these are the things you should know about Jesse Churchill and yada, yada, yada. And it's a form that we have to fill out. It gets sent in and then they vote on it. And so that is, you know, so I'm just saying, I respect that organization, and we do that. Other unions have chosen to go ahead, and that's their right. And I'm not, you know, I'm not going to get into other unions' business. I'm just going to stick with our own union, and that's what we've chosen to do. And I respect that. It does not stop a woman right now in the Washington Conference or any otherwhere, as far as I'm concerned, for them to be a pastor of a church, for them to share the gospel, whether they believe in women's ordination or not. And there's some women who don't, and that's okay too. And I think the thing that has been lost is sometimes we lose respect for somebody who might have a different view. And we've politicized it way too much, that if you believe this way, I lose respect for you. And I'm sitting here going, I'm going to respect male and female who believe in it. I'm going to respect male and female who don't believe in women's ordination, because I believe that is what Christ asks us to do, is to accept and believe and to respect a diversity of beliefs, and the mission still can go forward, whether I have a belief in one way or the other.
Just as you talk about that, talking about respect on both sides, what popped in my head was how, and this is my question, my concern for our churches, do you think we're moving in the right direction when it comes to not just unity, as that's been a big word in our church over the last 5 years or so since the last general conference session, but are we moving in the right direction towards good conversation and finding a common ground and working towards harmony in the church? Or are we starting to lean into the general population's attitude towards politics in general? Because it does seem, let's talk about larger politics, we've become more polarized. We've become more vocal on things like social media, on news outlets, where we see what seems to be an even stronger divide than there's ever been on certain issues. And it seems like in some ways we've, as a church, mirrored some of those sentiments and practices and rhetoric in our own churches. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you think we're, as a church at large, moving in a good direction with the conversations we're having? Or do you think we have a lot to work with? We have a lot of improving that we need to do there.
Well, I've seen the same social media arguments, I'm sure that you have, maybe not the same ones, but with the same tenor of that. And I do believe that, I don't know what it is about social media that seems to give people permission to just be mean to each other. I don't get that, because I've met many of the people who I've seen some of the stuff that they've written, and they're pretty nice people in person, you know? But for some reason, when we're sitting behind a screen typing on the computer, we can become vile to each other, and it's really sad. So I guess the answer to it is twofold. Do I think that the church is reflective of the overall political milieu that we see? I believe that it has infiltrated the church. I've seen that. I get letters telling on pastors, so to speak, and whatever wrong choices that they are supposedly.
Have you gotten any on me yet?
You know, I've got a whole file. It's about this thick.
Oh no,
he's got.
I have not.
Five volumes,
ten yeah. terabyte hard drive.
No, but I've seen that. I get it. You know, for people that, you know, write, and you know, some of them is about me and my choices, and I'm trying to be very respectful. So I think that I've seen that. The church at large, I've seen a lot of at least ways in a lot of the committees that I've been. I've seen a real desire to work together. Frankly, I'm optimistic. You know, in spite of the fact that what I see on is sometimes a public persona. Not from the church, not from church officials, but just from, you know, just from stuff you see on social media. And so I think it's a little bit of a two-sided story there, Sean, in that I've seen that, the really ugly side of it, but I've also seen a desire to say, hey, let's get together. Let's figure out how to pray together. You know, I just heard it, you know, without saying any names, I saw, you know, some people I was on a conversation with just recently, some people that are in organizations, if you want to use the term higher than this one, and the conversation that they were having amongst themselves. And I was encouraged by it. I really was. I was encouraged by it. Two opposing views, but two very respectful conversations that was alluded to. And I think there's, I think there's a real desire on you know, to use the term conservative and liberal. I think there is a real desire to say, hey, God's given us a mission. Let's focus on that. And let's continue the conversation, figure out how we can address some of these issues of equity and that kind of thing. And it's not going to be it's not going to be a short conversation. I think it's going to be a long conversation. But I just recently, I should say, I've been encouraged. I'll just say it that way.
That's good, because like you said, sometimes in the public, we don't always hear those stories. And so it's just helping, you know, the local church, the lay people, the people that make up the church, just giving them a chance to see, like, it's not just the big headlines. I know, like, where our podcast started was in 2018 at the height of the annual council. I wouldn't call it a scandal, but it was definitely like more people on average were talking about Adventist politics than normal. Most right. time, the average church member is like, what's Adventist politics? Who cares? But there were more people than average talking about that. And we talked about that at the start of our podcast. And in some ways, it's smooth, not smooth over, but settled down. But in other ways, like with COVID, like you said, with something about social media, it's ramped up. We're spending less time in person talking to people relationship to relationship. And again, with social media, there can be many benefits, but it also creates a platform for this half anonymity, not full anonymity, but your name's there, your profile pic's there. But there's something different about being in person in the same room and saying the same opinions and dissent. And there's a certain thing that clicks in your brain to say, I need to be kind here and respectful and listen, because I'm right here eye to eye with this person, versus when you're typing on a post or a thread, something goes out the window. Right. And there's many people I've respected in many different positions that's been been the case. So yeah, like you said, there's something about that platform which has exponentially grown since COVID, because where else can we meet and talk?
Right. No, it's sad. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that's what's powerful about the church, and it gives a space where we have to be in relationship, and you know, you can't say the same things, you know, you can't say the same things in person as you can online, because you have to feel someone's experiences. Though, Sean, I will say that I believe that you're just a mediocre person at best to your face. I'll say it right now. sorry, I love you. Doug, I just kind of wanted to ask you this question. This is the three of us are all under 30. Which, you know, means that we know everything. We just haven't had the chance to really like tell the world yet. You know?
Got it.
So,
yeah.
no, actually it's the question is, you're in a situation, you're in a position that, you know, someone explained it to me this way. Small organizations are kind of like speedboats. You can turn them quick. You can pivot quickly and all that stuff. You get to the farther you get in an organization, it becomes kind of like now you get a yacht, and then you get like to a cargo ship where it's going to take miles to turn.
Right.
How do you reconcile that kind of slow burn, the slow change, the, oh man, this is going to take years, not days. With maybe, you know, having been a pastor, or for those of us who are, you know, either church members or pastors who to a certain degree can change things a lot quicker. How do you handle the slowness of all of that at in your position?
From a personal perspective, it can be very frustrating, you know, just to be honest. you know, I drive, I used to own a speedboat, and I like to turn on a dime. I like to ramp it up and see how hard of a turn I could go in. I like the G forces. So yeah, I enjoyed that. You know, on the one hand, I think it can be very frustrating. On the other hand, there's been times I'm really glad it moved slow, because you learned as you turned. And instead of just making a snap decision, you like, wait a minute, this is not a good decision. And you have a chance to correct the turn before you get too far down the path. And so there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors. And even though a multitude of counselors takes a lot longer to get to consensus, once you get to that consensus, a prayerful consensus, whatever the topic, whether it be women's ordination, and that's the thing, you know, we go back to what we were just talking about. If there's a prayer time, if people are really truly praying with each other, not just praying for each other, you know, pray for Sean that he'll get his act together, pray for Anthony that whatever. You know, I mean, that's the way a lot of that you can pray for people to shape up, because I have no problem.
Yeah.
Right? Or you can pray with people to say, how can we come to a better understanding of what of this, and let's really truly open our hearts to each other and to God, and maybe I'm wrong on a topic, and am I willing to accept that? And I think that's what happens when you do a slower turn versus let's just turn on a dime and make this happen, you know? And I do believe there's things that we should turn on a dime for. I mean, I'm grateful for COVID, to be honest with you. Because some of the churches had to turn on a dime and do some amazing things that they didn't even know they could. I mean, we have a church in this conference that didn't know they could have a stream. Well, they knew, but they never had a streaming service. And they put up a streaming service and had two baptisms of people that just started watching it. They didn't have a lot of bells on their streaming service. They didn't have any bells and whistles in their streaming service, if I was going to mention, to be honest with it, you know. But the pastor called me and said, yeah, we had two people that, you know, started watching online. And one of them was from California and drove all the way up here to be baptized from California, you know.
Wow.
One of our smallest churches. In one of our smallest churches. So what kind of turns on a dime we should be able to do, because that's ministry related. And boom, you know, we can do those kind of things. Other things that have, you know, a lot far reaching concepts or ideas, I think the slow turn is actually better, you know.
I don't like it, but it's wise.
I don't like it half the time either, because if anybody really knows me, I'm somewhat of an impatient person. So that's the dirt on.
That's helpful to understand, especially for I think for a lot of us at other levels, is to kind of have the humanness, to have someone who is frustrated about, oh man, I wish these things would go faster, but also someone who understands that this is good. There is goodness to this. And it can be very hard, I think, for a lot of us as we look at organizational structures and just be like, oh man, like this is just slow. It's you know, what is the use? What's the purpose? But that's kind of why we wanted to talk and ask some of these questions. So, so thank you, Doug. We really appreciate.
Sorry, just I cut you off. I was going to say that's,
yeah, go for it.
I think that's really powerful what you shared, Doug, especially about like praying not only for each other, but with each other. I think that's really strong. And I feel like that's so, as Jesse was saying, like, it's so humanizing. I'm so like, what an honor. Thank you for coming on the podcast, just to be able to, cause I think someone like you in your position, it's when you're just a leader, I think sometimes you don't get humanized. And I think even for me, I mean, we all grew up in the same conference, and so we knew who you were and, you know, and have interacted and stuff like that. But I think I remember, just to share a quick personal story, when I was at my first church in Anacortes, Washington, back when I was in Washington conference, as a local church hire. And you came one Sabbath to you came one Sabbath to church. Like I did not know at all. And I was preaching that week, and I don't know if you knew this, but I was not feeling confident about my sermon that Sabbath. And as soon as you walked in, I was like, oh no, this is the worst. This is the worst weekend for Doug Ving to show up. But then afterwards, you came up and shook my hand and you said, I appreciate your sermon. And I was really honored by that. And I think just thank you so much for coming on the podcast, because I feel like this opportunity to humanize you and demystify, as we've talked about, you know, some of the office, you know, the dark rooms or whatever. Like, I think this is, thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty normal people here in the office. We really are.
Yeah. My wife works there, so I hope you are. So thank you, Doug. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming on. We thank you. Thank you for your service in the positions that you have already been in, like pastoring and ministerial and vice president, now president. And we all will vote for you for GC president. So 2028, I guess. I made it up.
I have no aspirations, as we talked about that. God bless you guys.
Well, thank you
for the time, and we love you guys. Thanks a lot.
So that was our conversation with Doug Bing. I hope that was a helpful and maybe a little bit more enlightening conversation surrounding the conferences in our church structure. Now, if you are interested in giving us feedback or connecting with us, Go to Instagram or Facebook at Seeking What They Sought. Go to our website, Seeking SDA, and you can also give there. Again, this is a helpful thing for us. We're not in this to make money, but a helpful way for us to continue supporting our website and our podcast storage space and beyond. So if you want to give, you can go there. As always, we'll see you in the next episode.